Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Today, we have a lot of information to share. We're going to have an audio clip on What's the Perfect Relationship from the Daily Goldcast. It's official. We're living in the prequel to Blade Runner. Rapid Fire. What brain and sperm share and why we should care. Dr. Deborah Davis at a TED Talk. Commentaries today. Chris Hedges, Neoliberalism's Dark Path to Fascism, Truth Dig. Why This Planet is Becoming Uninhabitable, from Eric Zeus and from Countercurrents, and I'll add my own comments on that because some new information came in today that shows that it is virtually physically impossible. Let's underline that with exclamation marks. It is at this moment that we're speaking, it is physically impossible for us to do a damn thing that's going to matter about global warming and climate change. I'll explain later. Household corporate debt reached an all-time high, and this is from Washington blog, and boy, is it high. Why should we care? America's permanent war complex, Garth Porter, and we'll look at that. And 11 companies that control everything you buy, from the natural blaze, Luke Fernandez. If you can't listen live, please write down this number. You can call it 24/7, and with one phone call, you can download 5 archival shows. Please write down our archive number, because about 99% of the people listen on the archives. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. Other people are listening live right now from all over the world, by the way. In fact, I just got this latest report. And there's 15,000 plus radio stations and radio personalities that use this service to reach more people who can't listen to a land-based station. People like Alex Jones, and it's not important whether you like or dislike these people, what their political agenda is. These are just the people using the service. You know, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, Michael Savage, a lot of conservatives, and a lot of liberals. We have more than all of them combined. Number one listened to radio program by this service in the world. Here's the number you listen live. 641-793-7091. 641-793-7091. I realized people didn't have a chance last night to listen to the download because a lot of people don't have internet access. So, what we're going to do is tomorrow, I'm going to play last night's Progressive Commentary Hour about what has happened to the liberal media. And what about those people call themselves progressive, but they're not progressive at all? They're simply corporate Democrats. What happened to the bastions of open and free thought that would take on controversial issues? Well, the guest last night was Chris Hedges. Also, we had Eutrice Lee talking about her experience of being a journalist, an African-American, a woman, and what has happened with identity politics and how the media is covering, especially the liberal media. And Chris Hedges spent 33 minutes of the program. So we're going to broadcast this on our sister station tomorrow because you will not want to miss this. This is an interesting perspective. That'll be at noon. Otherwise, people can download the shows. We begin with the latest on health and healing, and this comes from the National University of Singapore. And what it is, it's about tea. Now, there they're drinking green tea, oolong tea, black tea, white tea. But drinking these teas on a daily basis can cut your risk of dementia by 50% and reduce cognitive impairment by as much as 86%. That's according to the recent study by the Department of psychological medicine at the National University of Singapore. They looked at 900 senior citizens ages 55 and older and found that certain components in the tea can guard against neurological disorders. And furthermore, it is able to help with slowing down Alzheimer's as well. So that's very important. And also last night and this was published in the Journal of Nutrition, Health and Aging, peer review journal, I was sent a note from a friend who said, Sandra Day O'Connor, former Supreme Court Justice, is suffering from a mental condition. He didn't say whether it was Alzheimer's or dementia. I'm assuming it's one of the two. I haven't read about it. And that there's nothing can be done. Well, that's not true. There's nothing that she's going to get that can be done because she's going to take the orthodox approach, in which case, then it is correct. But we've helped a lot of people with all forms of Alzheimer and cognitive conditions, multiple sclerosis, and other conditions. So if anyone wants to reach out to Ms. O'Connor and let her know that there's an alternative approach, we'll be happy to speak with her. It's a natural, non-toxic approach also. Beware of evening stress. This is from Hokkaido University, which is in Japan. And this was published in Neuropsychopharmacology Reports. Stressful events in the evening, that would be after 4 p.m., release less of the body's stress hormones than those that happen in the morning, suggesting a vulnerability to stress in the evening. So then I'm thinking, okay, how can we make this more easily applicable and understandable? Your body's central system reacts less strongly to acute psychological stress in the evening than it does in the morning. And that's the takeaway message. We have what is known as a hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, or better called HPA. And that responds differently to acute psychological stress according to the time of day. Now, this axis connects to the central nervous and endocrine systems in the body. And cortisol, which I've spoken many times about, it's necessary when you have a flight or fight response, but it's really damaging and can kill you, absolutely prematurely ages you, if you have chronic stress, where it's elevated. Remember, cortisol, C-O-R-T-I-S-O-L, is our primary stress hormone. It's released for several hours when the HPA axis, and again, that's your hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, is under a stressful event. And that helps provide the body with energy in the face of a perceived need to fight or flee. And cortisol levels are also regulated by a master circadian clock in the brain and are normally high in the morning and low in the evening. So when the team measured the rhythm of salivary cortisol levels from the individuals, and they found that when a stressful event occurs in the evening, your body does not respond well to it. It's just the idea that in the evening, and we can't always control this, of course, but our body is better prepared in a highly anabolic state to deal with stress in the morning at best, in the afternoon, but less so in the evening. That's why we should have more laughter and joy and fun and sensuality and pleasure in the evenings and less stress. From the Salk Institute, published in Cell Reports, why screen time can disrupt sleep. For most, the time spent staring at screens on computers or phones or iPads constitutes many hours and can often disrupt sleep. Now, the Salk Institute researchers have pinpointed how certain cells in the eye process ambient light and reset our internet clocks, the daily cycles of physiological processes known as the circadian rhythms. So when these cells are exposed to artificial light late in the evening at night, our internal clocks can get confused, resulting in a whole host of health issues. Let me give you a simple idea of how bad it is. When people are being treated for cognitive dysfunction, cancer, obesity, insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, even jet lag and migraines, that all has an effect upon our body's biochemistry. So it's hypersensitive if you're sick. So when you go to sleep, you should ideally be able to go to sleep within 30 seconds from the time your head hits the pillow or the, in my case, I don't use pillow, mattress. If you have a dark room, that helps. If you have a light on because you get up to go to the bathroom and you don't want to trip into something, that actually lessens the quality of you being able to go to sleep and stay asleep. If there's noise, you can adapt to the noise, but the brain can't. So that's disruptive to that circadian cycle and the production of melatonin, the hormone in the pineal gland that's released to help you rebuild your immune system when you're sleeping. So noise and light are big factors, but if there's an electromagnetic pulse, if you have a cell phone within 10 feet of your body, a television that has been unplugged, turning a television off does not stop the pulsation. You have to unplug it. Some form of digital clock, you have to get it away from your head. So all of those are disruptive. But the more you spend watching a computer, the more exposed you are to artificial light, whether from screen time or spending indoors or staying awake late at night. And the lifestyle causes disruptions to our circadian rhythms, and that has deleterious consequences on our health. So if you have cancer, it's worse. Diabetes, it's worse. And by the way, just so you know, the back of our eyes contain a sensory membrane called the retina, R-E-T-I-N-A, whose innermost layers contain tiny subpopulation of light-sensitive cells that operate like pixels in a digital camera. So when these cells are exposed to ongoing light, a protein called melanospin, M-E-L-A-N-O-P-S-I-N, continually regenerates within them, signaling levels of ambient light directly to the brain to regulate consciousness and sleep and alertness. Well, this melanospin plays a pivotal role in synchronizing our internal clock after 10 minutes of illumination and under bright lights, and suppresses the hormone melatonin, and you need melatonin to regulate sleep. So if you're not secreting melatonin, you're not getting a good night's sleep. And that is going to end up affecting your whole immune system. From Dan Cook University in South Korea, published in Food Science and Technology, there's great probiotic potential in Korean soy sauce because it has very high bacterial strains which help recolonize your gut and help your body benefit tremendously. Just, you know, I'm not a big believer in soy sauce. It has too much sodium. And anything that you could do with that, I can duplicate it without the soy, using a combination of different herbs and lime juice. So you don't get the sodium, but you get the taste. From the University of Edinburgh, cooking at high temperatures raises the risk of heart disease due to toxic chemicals being released. This recent study warns that cooking food at high temperatures can increase the risk of developing heart disease. And the research was also carried out to explore why some ethnicities are more apt to develop heart disease than others. And when food is cooked at a temperature greater than 150 degrees centigrade, it modifies the chemical structure and can produce toxic products known as neoformed contaminants, or NFCs. Now, In the American diet, trans fatty acids are formed when oil breaks down as a result of food being fried at high temperatures. Think of French fries, fried chicken, fried fish. All right? These are all of what is ending up in our body. Now, these are banned from food sales in different sections of the world because we know that they're harmful. But also, they create what is called an advanced glycation, glycation end product, meaning it speeds up the death of a cell. Quite simply, what could I use? This is the easiest way of understanding it. Every time you eat a donut that's been deep fried, most are, French fries, pizza, any of these foods, you're taking time off your life. It's that simple. So, when you look at different oils used around the world and in urbanized South Asia, like Pakistan and India, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, those are all very high temperatures. They do a lot of frying, very unhealthy food, and their lifespan is affected. In fact, I'll give you one example. Men born in Pakistan have a 62% higher risk of dying from a heart attack in comparison to those in England or Wales. And part of that is because of the risk of diabetes is higher. And you go to India now, and diabetes is and obesity is rampant. Never used to be. Now it is. From Leipzig University in Germany, published in the European Heart Journal, a study about endurance but not resistance training has anti-aging effects. Now, for those of us, myself included, who are endurance athletes, meaning training for a marathon, a 50K, or longer, we have been of the belief, based upon shared insights, that either swimming or cross-country skiing or cycling or power walking or jogging will help us age better than resistance exercise, which involves strength training with weights. In a study published in the European Heart Journal just today, researchers in Germany looked at the effects of three types of exercise: endurance training, high-intensity interval training, and resistance training, on the way cells in the human body age, and they found that the endurance and high-intensity training both slowed or even reversed cellular aging, but the resistance did not. Our DNA is organized into chromosomes in all the cells of our body. At the end of each chromosome, you've heard me say this many times, is a repetitive DNA sequence. It's called a telomere. T-E-L-O-M-E-R-E. Now that caps the chromosome and protects its ends from deteriorating. As we grow older, the telomeres shorten, and this is an important molecular mechanism for cell aging, which eventually leads to cell death when the telomere is no longer able to protect itself and the chromosomes can't protect the DNA. So the process of telomere shortening is regulated by several proteins. Among them is the enzyme telomerase, which is able to counteract the shortening process and can even add length to the telomeres. And that's why power walking, swimming, cycling, jogging, these are the ones that lengthen the telomeres. Doing crunches and back extensions and weight training machines and pull downs, and that's all good, but it's not going to lengthen your life. Simple, but it's important. I'm Gary Noll. We're 20 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. We're going to play you only a part of this rapid fire. This is Dr. And she's a PhD, Dr. Devra, D-E-V-R-A, Davis, D-A-V-I-S. This is at a TED conference. It's a 13, almost 14-minute talk. We'll play about 6 minutes, enough for you to start to get the idea that what we don't consider about our cell phones and about reproduction are very important. Because now here's what she's not saying. She's saying that the science on this is very good because they've studied it. I'm suggesting if a cell phone could do this to sperm, what else could it do? What about people who wear their cell phones in their pocket, up around their heart? What could it do to the heart or the lungs? And what about women who wear it in their pocket? What could they do to the ovaries? And what about people that sleep with one under their, a lot of teenagers do, sleep with a cell phone right under their pillow? What would that do to the brain? So this is where we have to distinguish between monotheistic principles, meaning a single focus. Now, this is not just an existential and abstract exercise for me. It's very pragmatic because I've worked for what most people would consider an extended career, almost 34 years, at the Institute of Applied Biology. I was a research fellow and head of the Department of Anti-Aging Medicine. And mine was the only research that was not based upon finding drugs. There were 16 other departments, and these other departments had some very bright people, but they were interested in the drug that would reverse cancer, a lot of cancer research, or one that would help with pain, or something to replace methadone, which was a replacement for heroin. That's all they looked at, nothing else. But life is multi-interfacing. Every single day, we consume, even in a healthy environment, products that are part of something that may be principally healthy. But if you drink water and it comes out of a plastic bottle, the water may be healthy. What about the plastic if it's gotten heated during transport or storage? So we don't take these things into consideration. Even this, there's a new study I just read this morning about how this idea that we're allowed so much of a toxic element in our body and the government arbitrarily sets this. Well, I've seen how corrupt those government bodies are when they started finding so much DDT in the early 1970s in products. They simply started raising the amount that your body could tolerate. There was no science behind that. It was completely arbitrary. It was to protect the industries manufacturing DDT. Because if they said, this is the level, you can't go beyond this, then no DDT would be allowed. We see it now with mercury. They're giving you over 5,000% more mercury in the first 6 years of life than what their own studies show is able to be handled by the body. That's in vaccines. So if you say to the whole world, this is the most amount of mercury your body should handle, beyond this, you're going to have devastating effects. It's a neurotoxin. And suddenly every vaccine has more than that per vaccine. Then you either have to get rid of all of those vaccines or get rid of the ingredient as an adjuvant in those vaccines. Get rid of that adjuvant, then the adjuvant is put in there to make the vaccines more powerful. Now you're not going to have powerful vaccines. You see the cycle, it's a cycle of perfect logic. We're giving you something that has never been proven safe or effective in any given individual by any gold standard. But because we are the authorities, and since the Supreme Court in the 1800s said that science is the final arbiter of all truths, then as long as we are in medical science, which itself is an oxymoron, then the logic is that we are the foundation of all truth, and whether or not what we offer you works or doesn't work is irrelevant. It is your belief that we are the final arbiters, and our belief that we are the final arbiters that is only important. The media are too dumb. They are, and they're so biased. I mean, I don't know why they have in a 1% credibility rating. Anyhow, nobody's going to argue against the dominant paradigm if you are part of it. Only those who've been excluded. But if you're excluded from being part of the dominant paradigm, then you're that voice in the woods. No one's going to hear you. When your voice stops, it's like a tree falling. Did someone say something? Didn't hear it. Did the tree drop? I'm not aware of it. So we only pay attention to policies from the dominant paradigm because we've said to ourselves and convinced ourselves, and if you doubt me, I can show you real dumb, but it would embarrass a lot of people. But most people are not getting much in life because they're tied into the dominant paradigm must collapse all other realities, all other truths, all other options. And therefore, everybody goes forth every day, always being rewarded for their effort and their desire to do well, not for their actual accomplishments. What are the results? Why should that matter? You're going to pay us, you're going to reward us, you're going to praise us for our efforts. The cancer patient died, 560,000 died this year. But it was a gallant fight on behalf of the doctors. But you've been in this gallant fight for what, 40 years, 44 years. So for 44 years, if you've had 500,000 people die, you've had over 10 million people die. That's medical genocide. At what point do you realize either A, because you're a doctor doesn't mean you're smart. It just means you're a really good person to replicate information you've been given without the ability or desire or intellect to challenge it. PhDs do that, not MDs. Let's be very clear about that. And I want to be emphatically clear about that. No doctor ever had to prove uniqueness to the field to which they're being given a doctorate. All PhDs do. But that's a side issue. That is a challenge we will offer at a different time. I'm just merely showing you that the fact that someone is an MD doesn't make them uniquely brilliant. It can make them a hard worker, make them very disciplined in learning, but it's not information they created, nor is it information they've challenged. They're taking it in as a given. But if the given has never had to be proven by any gold standard, then there is no there there. That's not Gertrude Stein, that's just common sense. So you're starting off with everybody in the world accepting that whatever we're being told must be right because they're in power. If they weren't right, they wouldn't be in power. They wouldn't be rewarded. They wouldn't be getting the top dollar. They wouldn't be getting all these honors and deferred to. But what if they're not getting results? That's irrelevant. Why is it irrelevant not to get results? Because our logic is perfect. The results and consequences of our logic being applied are imperfect. Stop with the first and don't look at the second. And that's virtually everything in our society, at every institution, in every belief system in our society. I share that with you simply because in monotheistic thinking, yesterday I mentioned something about the little historical and social oversight about the Renaissance. But what I didn't share was this, and this is probably the single most important thing that we can learn from the Renaissance. Go to any of the cities where it was really magically shared for over 300 years in its development, and then it stopped, and we've just been living with the consequences of looking back, but we don't have any Renaissance today. None. We have big buildings. We have some unique and beautiful buildings. We have art. None of it do I like. And we have music. None of it do I like. But that's just me. And that's my own, you know, subjective opinion. But we have massive narcissism pretending to be unique in art. But you'll put a building in the middle of a town and you don't care what it does to the rest of the community. This is the narcissism within the power and the elite, but there was a group of powerful people who were also spiritual and were humanistic, and they brought philosophers and ethicists into their discussions. They brought engineers and artists into their discussions. They would sit at a table every day. Lorenzo da Vinci did this, and they would say, how can we do something that benefits everyone? How can we allow the citizenry to become wiser, more understanding that this entire community is for all of us? And then they would all give their input. And that's why there's always, there is order, there is balance, there's symmetry, and there is beauty in everything that was done. But here's the final point on this, and think about this, please. When you were going to any place, let's say you go to Florence and you look at one of the great gardens, or you look at the Statue of David, you're seeing it as if you were in a museum. You're seeing it as if you're watching it on, you know, the computer, the history of famous museums, the Hermitage Museum in Russia, one of the greatest. What if I suggested that all of that art, the vast majority, was viewed differently? What if it was created with the idea that you should see it as if you were the artist looking back into that square, into the palazzos, into the valleys, from the tops of the hills? So don't look at the art as if you're standing there taking 10,000 pictures and sharing them, but understanding what it was to be the artist and what was the purpose of the art and what did it represent and how did you create that and what went into it, so you see a more full representation of that uniqueness that changes completely your perception. Because then you'll be able to speak with people differently. You'll be able not just to hear what they're saying and try to fit it into the vortex of your own belief systems, but what if you stayed neutral and listened to them, and then in what they were saying, trying to see the whole person, see what they're trying to express or not express, be able to articulate in full or part. It is when we stop from our own thinking and seeing and filtering and look from the other perspective, do we understand more and see it in an altogether different light. And that's why meditation is so important. It helps us do that. So we're going to go to that lecture right now, and we'll play about 6 minutes of it.
Talk to you about something that at first may sound like a Saturday Night Live routine, but it's really not. It's a matter that merits the most serious attention. Two of the fastest working and fastest growing parts of the body, the brain and sperm. But what they have in common is something on which the future of our species depends. How many of you know that 1 in 6 American couples is unable to have a child when they want to? How many of you know that last year the birth rate in this country dropped the most that it ever has in recent history? According to the CDC, 3% in a single year. Now, I want to let you in on a dirty secret. Phones are not tested in the way they're used. They're tested in a holster away from the body. You may remember the diesel engine scandal, Volkswagen engines, which were revealed to be rigged so that when the engine was hooked up to a computer, it automatically reduced the emissions. And as a result, when the engines were running in the real world, they emitted a lot more pollution. The results of that are evident in European cities today, where you've got smoke and pollution because those cars are on the road. So what happened? You can rig the test, but you can't rig the real world. Now, the French have done something different. They often do. They've tested phones in real-world conditions. That means they actually tested them next to the body. And they did something amazing. They took 400 phones off the shelf, put them through a test system, and they found that 9 out of 10 phones failed to pass the current European standards. You can see the bar there showing you that when the Apple iPhone 5 was tested according to the manufacturers, it easily passed the test. When it was tested with 5 millimeter distance, it still passed. But when it was tested directly next to the body, you can see that it exceeded the standard by more than double. Now, would you want to fly an airplane that had 20-year-old safety standards? And yet, the safety standards for our phones today are based on tests that were developed 20 years ago. They were developed for military and medical uses with people who didn't speak too much, 6 minutes, an average call. That's how our phones are in fact tested today, off the body, not realistically. Now, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation decided to test phones under real-world circumstances, and their premier newscaster, investigative journalist, Wendy Messley, put together a six-figure investigation going to the FCC-approved laboratories in the United States with the three most popular phones, and this is what they found.
This is a special edition of Marketplace.
Most of us carry our phones next to our body. And why wouldn't we?
Science, tests, and the hidden message in your cell phone.
So the tests are all done?
Tests are all finished.
And?
The number exceeded the limit. It went up significantly with each one of the phones.
That's right. The phones exceeded the safety limit when they were moved right against the body. The radiation absorbed increased 3 to 4 times.
That's right. 3 to 4 times when phones were tested the way you all have been using them until today. When you have a phone in your pocket, it's a two-way microwave radio. It's sending and receiving a signal, a handshake, 900 times a minute. And so long as it's on, whether you're using it or not, it's sending that microwave signal. And this is why the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation decided to do the testing. Now, what about the U.S.? Well, this video shows you what's in your phone right now, those phones that you've been carrying. You can see here that if you go to your home screen and you click on your settings there, and from settings you click on general, and from general you go to the top to about, and from about you go all the way down to something you've probably never seen called legal. And yes, when you click on legal, you get to RF exposure. And when you click on RF exposure, there you see it. You read through all of that, and it tells you that when phones were tested, they were kept 5 millimeters away from the body. Now, 5 millimeters is not very big distance, but it's big enough to make a huge difference in how much radiation gets into you. And that is why you've all been warned, you just didn't know it. We think we can do a better job, and that's why I'm delighted to be here with you in the TED audience tonight to talk about how you can take more precautions. We know in Jackson Hole, because the town council passed a resolution in 2010 letting people know about cell phone safety, and if you happen to live in Berkeley, you know about it because the city of Berkeley has passed a right-to-know law. But otherwise, you're out of luck unless you know how to operate your phone. Now let's go back to those fast-moving sperm. They are fast. They're amazing. They grow at the rate of 90,000 times a minute. 90,000 cells a minute are produced in the natural way. They can swim, when they're made, the equivalent of from Los Angeles to Hawaii at 10 miles an hour. It's really quite amazing. Why do you need so many of them? Because we want the healthiest sperm to survive. We want the survival of the fittest. Of course, you may wonder why you need so many of them. And you can see here, they don't really swim in a direction. And you know, the reason you need so many is really quite simple. Sperm don't know how to ask for directions. Now, the fast cells of the brain are even faster than the sperm. They grow at 250,000 neurons a minute. And at birth, the baby's brain is a marvel of metamorphosis. It is 100 billion neurons at birth. It's a third of the size of an adult, and by the time that baby has reached 2 years of age, their brain is 80% the size of an adult. While it's grown in size, the brain of a baby is not fully myelinated. Myelin is fat. Fat is critical to the functioning of neurons. It protects the neurons with a fatty sheath that insulates them from damage, and actually is thought to be critical to the development of impulse control and judgment, which is why it won't surprise those of you who survive teenagers to understand that myelination is not complete until the mid-20s. When we look at what we know about both the sperm and brain, they're both fast and fatty. And the fat is really important because fat has been called a natural hazardous waste site. It attracts a lot of organic garbage to it. And one of the things we know is that toxic agents can get into fat, They're attracted to it, and they can get, either through the skin or through inhalation, a toxic agent can get into the body where it can be distributed, and all of the agents on the screen behind me, solvents, ionizing radiation, metals, and pesticides, are attracted to fat. But guess what? Microwave radiation enhances the absorption of any toxic material in your body. That is why it's so important to understand that you want to keep these devices off your body and especially away from your children, because the fat-loving brain and the fat-happy sperm both are storage sites for toxic agents. Now, the younger brain is going to absorb more exposure than the older brain. These images come from work that Environmental Health Trust scientists have done at Porto Alegre, a federal university in Brazil. Claudio Fernandez, Alvaro de Sales, and their teammates have produced this imaging work with us. And we can show you, seen with the yellow-white part showing the highest exposures, that the cell phone radiation gets all the way through into the eyes of a child age 6 that might have a phone next to their brain. The consequences, remember, that brain is not protected with myelin, and therefore the exposures of anything to it are going to have a greater impact. This is work done by the head of the National Institute of Drug Abuse and published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. This is a PET scan, a very sophisticated slice of the brain developed by Nora Volkoff. She shows that just 50 minutes of holding a cell phone directly next to the head increases the production of glucose metabolized into the brain, even if the phone is not making any sound and the person in the study is not aware that the phone is turned on. It produces more sugar in the brain.
That's just a small part. The full commentary I hope that you listen to, you can listen on prn.fm. I might mention this also. We have hired someone new, a really bright individual in his field, of bringing us the finest progressive information on every topic imaginable. And for those of you who go to Al Jazeera or RTV or any of the BBC, any of the sites, because you want to get information that is not as filtered or limited as what you might get in much of the other media, we have been putting hundreds of stories, videos, all free on our website, and sometimes as many as 100 different things a day, morning, noon, and night. So, and the numbers of people coming to read articles, to get different perspectives, the numbers are astronomical. So just go to prn.fm 24/7 and you can read all this, and you can watch these videos as well. I mentioned earlier that one of the reasons I do not believe our efforts will work is not because we do not have brilliant people. We do. It is not because we do not have technology that couldn't help with a lot of these. That certainly could be an effort. It's that we do not have the political will. Right now, there are more than 100 major coal-powered plants going into production and being designed. On the one hand, you have coal, which is a major cause of CO2 pollution and global warming. And on the other hand, you have China that is acting rather schizophrenic. On the one hand, the Chinese are doing more on solar than any other group on the planet. The Germans were. They are now number one. They're the second largest economy in the world. In the next 2 years, they'll probably overtake the United States. We become a consumer society, a service society. They become a manufacturing and a consumer society. But in order to satisfy this incredible appetite for all things Western, from our furniture and cars to our diet, they're having to take over large areas of the planet and to grow genetically engineered soybeans to feed to their pigs and their cattle so they can have more of this for their population. India is also engaged in that and using massive amounts of quality land in non-productive ways. were destroying a lot of the rainforest. But now the Chinese are building more coal power plants than any place else on Earth at the same time that they're being adversely affected by global warming. So they're doing a lot of unique things that no one else in the world is doing, and that's good. And the other side, they're eating dogs and cats, and that's bad. On the one side, they're probably the leaders in advanced robotic technologies. They're now at the stage of getting very close to having human robots, where in the United States we have robots that look like mechanical dogs. They're far in advance. I know people in the field, and you'll be able to actually in the very near future, I'm talking about in the next year, you'll be able to buy a robotic artificial intelligence. Remember, when you hear that word artificial intelligence, it means that it's going to be smarter than you or any person that's ever lived. It will have more capabilities of retrieving information and giving you information. And if you are a person that likes that, you'll benefit. If you want to use your own brain, you won't. And these do not have emotions. They only have verbal responses to what an emotion should be. They cannot use reason. Everything is based upon a reductionist logic, based upon what the programmers believe a person would want to have or know or respond. So right now you've got that little box. It's either you can have it in your car, you can have it in your home, and you give it a command, and immediately it responds by doing something for you. Now imagine a human being that could be of the design you want, male or female, and look the way you want, be the size you want, and do anything for you, from satisfying you sexually to making a meal. That's happening. At the same time that they're creating that, and other countries are competing, including the Japanese, they also have no freedoms. In fact, in China, they have something new. It's based upon you're being a citizen of merit. You're given merit points. So every single thing you do now is being monitored. Every book you read, every thing you do on the internet, which they monitor, they control, and with the full cooperation of Google and Facebook, they also know what you eat, they know your weight, your health, everything about you. And as long as everything you do supports the communist and ideology, remember, China is a communist country run as a capitalist economy to make its money, but a communist society to control it. That is an odd combination, but that's how it works. So you have no freedom unless they give it to you. And if you do anything that they feel threatened by, even if you're not aware of it, you're given demerits, and they can demerit you to where you cannot go on any public transportation, you can't go fly, you can be limited, and then at a point they can put you into a re-education facility to correct all those things that they feel are wrong. And all this is going on right now as we speak. Every single person in China is being monitored this way. How long do you think it'll be before other countries think that's a good idea to control its citizenry? So on the one hand, where they're making some enormous strides on environmental action, they're also increasing their pollution at an astronomical level, as is the United States. We spend more on health than anything else is spent in the world, $3.5 trillion this year. Yet you don't see a thing written about what it's costing us. You only hear about the people who can't be covered. So the takeaway message is, as long as you can be covered, then it really doesn't matter the quality of the medical care you get, since the number one cause of death is medicine. The number one cause of injury is medicine. And we have absolutely verified this in a major book that was sent to 7,000 scientists and physicians. Not a single one responded to it. Every medical publication in the world was sent it. Not a single, even a rejection, nothing. It's like nobody wanted to open that door. So as long as you give people food, it doesn't matter if it's quality food or not. Healthcare, it can kill them or injure them or not help them. Nobody seems to care. The caring only is, am I covered? And that was the problem with Obamacare and before that Clinton care. And our current for-profit medical system. So even universal care would have to have a completely new realignment, because Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, they're still neoliberalist. Someday that'll actually penetrate into some of the younger people's brains. Take a look at their foreign policies if you doubt me, and you'll see what you chose not to see that is the full side of this picture. So if you only looked at China, what it's doing positive, you say, wow, what a place to live. Look what they're doing to their citizens, the environment, and their freedoms, and you say, wow, that's terrible. I would never want to live there. What kind of person does this? Well, and that's not going to change. So where exactly, if we're doing everything wrong on the environment, and we are because we politicized it, and the people who are doing the polluting are not going to change, and they control the politicians, and the people don't seem to care because we're not reversing Citizens United. Unless I'm mistaken, we haven't had a single march against Citizens United. And as long as we have Citizens United, some rich billionaire in Israel or some rich billionaire in Las Vegas, both in the gaming business, will be able to determine who our next president will be. And then George Soros can determine what social issues he feels strongly about, and no one criticizes him who takes his money. You're beginning to see, if you look at all this, where is there the political will to actually change? Are we going to change our diet? No. Are we going to eat more meat, refined carbohydrates, pollute more of our planet? Yes. Are we going to start using less plastic? No. Are we going to buy less stuff? No. Are we going to change our habits? No. But we want a safer planet. Yes. We don't want to be flooded, and we don't want to be drowned, and we don't want pollution, and we don't want to be burned to death. Yes, yes, yes. But we don't want to move out of California, the dumbest place in the world to live. No. And we're still believing the governor and other politicians out there as if these imbeciles really cared about us. Yes. And we're not going to stop living in Miami Beach and other places to show off our bling and sling. No. And we're going to continue to buy stuff that we don't need. Yes. With money we don't have. Absolutely. Create debt. Yes. And have debtors' prisons. Yes. And compounding interest on debt. Yes, yes, yes. And no one's going to do a damn thing about it. No. I see. So when I read this report this morning that says, quote, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York explains total household debt increased by $219 billion, which brings it up to $13.5 trillion for this quarter. That's how much people owe in just their household debt. That does not include all the other debt. Corporate debt is skyrocketing. State debt is exploded. Local debt. And then federal debt. And entitlement, unfunded debt. Wow, that's $200 trillion. So everybody's thinking that a Black Friday is great and a Cyber Monday is terrific, but we don't have the money to pay any of this debt. That's right. So we want a clean, healthy environment, but we're not willing to make any personal change. We only have 3% vegans, and everybody else is gorging on meat. Yeah, and the report just came out yesterday. We're the fattest of any nation in the world in history, and we're going to get fatter. Because somewhere there's something that we want to eat, and we're going to bite it. I see. Okay. Just so I'm clear, that's all. Just need the clarity. You know, you can always deal with the negatives as long as you understand them. So exactly where are we going to be able to make the change because of personal, spiritual, emotional, humanistic, and political will to say, I am the change, we should be the change, and then spread it from there. Individuals are certainly changing. We have about 5% of the American population are living very conscientiously on all levels, but they just don't happen to be policymakers or opinion leaders. They're not in the media, and they're not influencing people. So if you're looking for those wise men and women to come through your town whistling and singing and doing the can-can, as they say, let's all do something positive. It's not going to happen. There's nothing going to happen. Not today, not tomorrow, not in your lifetime. Oh, there are going to things be happening, but at least people listening to this program will be prepared for them. The other people, no. Tomorrow I'll do a commentary on it, on the dark path to our future. It's not a negative. It's just being honest. For those of you listening to WBAI, tomorrow you're going to hear Chris Hedges and others talking about what happened to the left media, the liberal media. What happened that it abrogated its responsibilities? For everyone else on PRN, I'll be doing an original program at noon and all of our other sister stations and around the world. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.